This is Ali Williams, and I'm with Firenze Giedig. Firenze, would you like to tell us how you got involved with NoFit State Circus and what your role is?
I think the first time that I got involved was in 1995, and I think it was you. I think it was you and Tom that asked me to possibly direct Autogeddon. I didn't know at that point exactly what it involved, and I didn't know. I mean, I had seen a couple of shows in the Blue Tent.
I remember the Arts Council of Wales, we went to them and said, so if we were going to do a large-scale project, have you got any recommendations of who we should use to direct? And they suggested you.
Right, well, that's good to know. People ask, how did you come to know each other? And, other than being in the community of artists in Wales or Cardiff, it was... But I remember Tim Adam after Autogeddon. Tim Adam being quite economical with words. He just came quite, in sort of his own one piece and saying, "You've done us proud." really quite surprised. "You've done us," on the Autogeddon.
Well, I think it was quite early in your directing career, wasn't it? Because I think you'd... Well, from what I remember from the Arts Council, they said, oh, you'd just come back from Ireland.
I lived in Ireland and I did the Welsh College, but I was doing... By the time Autogeddon happened, I was doing quite big site specifics. And in Ireland, maybe that's what they refer to. In Belfast, I directed this very big welfare state type.
That's what they must have been talking about then.
Possibly where, cars were coming out of the water and in the docks. And
so I remember us deciding that we wanted to do a large scale show in a warehouse, because we'd done a couple of years with Welsh National Opera putting circus into the community opera. And they'd kind of taught us how to do the work on a large scale, and we thought, oh, well, let's have a go at this without the opera, so we could make a show that was using the same format, engaging with different community groups with different disciplines, but do it with circus instead of opera. So that was the... So what do you remember about Autogeddon?
I loved it. I loved the... I had always done large-scale projects, a lot of them, but it was the first time that quite a few strands of the work came together. So there was the local rappers that might have, done a trumpet routine, and at that point you have to understand that trapeze was trapeze, and there was no difference between flying trapeze, swinging trapeze, and static trapeze. So it was quite interesting for me to encounter. There was a group of so-called, like professionals that was quite small.
Yeah, that came from circus space, a flying trapeze team.
Yeah. So there was... I remember there was an Australian girl.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I want to drive my Mustang. And then there were all these people from different parts of the community, from the all-inclusive percussion group to the trumpet people to the explosive cars types, to a couple of people from the samba band, probably. Bruce, that Bruce, the guy that was putting together the car explosion. And I just remember, I remember everything like, there's no way that I'm going to get my legs out of this, you know, like on a daily basis, you know. The, but somehow it was really quite interesting how it came together. Really quite interesting how the designers that was creating like the ozone zone, and the first time that I saw the moment in which the, it was, I think it was a piece of paper, it was creating the ozone layering, and the swinging trapeze was going through that, the lights coming together for that, and it was scale for the first time, that aerial part of it that was missing in the overall vision came together. And I remember
we used quite a lot of projection as well to enhance that, didn't we?
We used
front and back projection.
Front and back projections, rock and roll lights. It was in, you know, interesting how, again, coming through more a theatrical environment and more a filmic environment, that the movers and rock and roll lights were either looked upon as something, you know, not to be used, or not being really able to imagine how those could work to our advantage. And, you know, in that kind of context, it was, you know, the space was well carved out. The warehouse in Dunbar's Road was well carved out. I loved these two big shutters that went up and down. And I remember, I will always remember, since then, since Autogeddon, I've always refused to be on cans. And I remember going in the cans, if this is a dress rehearsal, it should be a dress rehearsal, and nobody's going to stop. Just get out of your own shit.
So for us, I think that was the first sort of artistic change in direction for the company, to start looking at bigger scale, but also the promenade aspect. And basically, we couldn't have put seats in that warehouse, so we decided to do it standing up. I think it was a bit of a fluke, of, but that has informed our, the way we deliver circus. That's the key point in No Fit State history, I think, that where we started on the promenade journey and the journey with you. So what else have you done since then?
So then there was a gap, I think, because the company were buying the new tent, I think, because at that point, I'd, you know, the big tent didn't exist, I think. And so there's quite a few years, actually.
Yeah, we worked between. We worked on a project called Stepping Stones with Orrit, which was also warehouse shows and looking at the past, present and future. And then we did the final one, Immortal, in the new tent when we bought it.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of the sort of large scale community shows. And then we wanted to make a show that we were gonna tour. And that's when we got you on board again.
Yeah,
that was, I remember, in 2004.
Yeah. I think we started chatting in 2003, but, you know, if not earlier, possibly. I remember the office in with the costume department.
In Clifton Street.
Yeah.
Just round the corner from where we are now, yeah. In 4 hours.
That's right. You know, that's interesting how, you know, a full set. I remember the office having a piece of cloth to
separate us off from the fancy dress shop.
I know. Yeah. That was the first meeting that we had. And that's when we started talking about Immortal.
I remember you saying, Well, I came to see the Immortal, or I saw the video, and I just thought it had no bollocks. That's what I remember about you in that meeting. I was like, oh, so you're going to put some bollocks into our work, are you, friends?
possibly. It sounds like something I would say. I think that there was something about...
And the other thing I remember, sorry to interrupt, was that you said, it's either got to be really exciting or you've got to pay me lots of money. And I remember saying, well, let's make it really exciting then.
I think that I didn't see Immortal in the tent. I remember I...
Saw the
had
video,
not,
maybe.
Yeah, a bit, bits of the video, definitely. So there was a new canvas, but it was in many ways starting the show and starting that work, which was coming from where I was, from how I was working, meeting. Peter, meeting the people that were there, that at that point were Barnes, and I remember for the first Immortal doing an audition in a church near the Star, the sports centre. And there was Howie in that, there were people like Kevin, Howie, quite a few people.
Yeah, so we were, at that point, we'd done 3 years of these community Immortals, and there was a bunch of community members that we wanted to give the opportunity to try and turn into professional circus performers. So they were the ones that we were taking along on the trainee programme that was funded by Council of Wales.
Yeah. So in that, I remember one of you guys saying... okay, these guys, two or three of these, are coming to the workshop, but we have to have them, no matter what. We have to have them. And I remember thinking, well, actually, they would be the ones that I would go for. There were people there. I really like the early days when there were lots of different age groups and... At that point, there was almost also the kids, like a real traveling troupe. But I also remember really going for that, kind of muscular, rough. I always remember the first time I choreographed the brawl. And the brawl was very much part of that first Immortal, where the brawl and the body percussion and the floor, the lights on the floor, and the fact that certain things were taking a different look, and how people moved in the tent, that there was still the famous non-revolving revolve.
Couldn't afford to make it turn round. It was round, though, wasn't it?
So the different idea of using a space that did not have little wee stages, but that created apparatus that came out and wasn't a stage. That's how it started, first of all. But and then there was, more incarnations of Immortal. And then I remember you coming and going... Okay, I need a title now, because the English, this guy is going to leave the English Arts Council, and I want to get the application in before he goes, and I want the title now. And I was going, oh, yeah, okay, great. And that's where Tab W
which they then said.
Taboo that Alison said, no, we can't have the title Taboo, because... I don't know, Boy George is going to sue us or something. And then we were going, okay, How can we write
let's
it?
Let's call it Tab W, which is Welsh.
So let's try the Welsh spelling, and that didn't work.
We went for the French in the end, didn't we?
Went for the French with the accent that way.
So, yeah, so we did 4 years where you directed Immortal, 2004 to 2007, and then Taboo ran for...
3 years.
3 years. Then what happens?
Taboo opened in 2008 in a really, really, really muddy Newport.
Yeah.
Where we hadn't even finished the show. We finished it in Norwich.
Yeah, we did the first half for opening night, didn't we?
Everybody was falling like flies and we were sinking in mud. But yeah, 2008 until 2010, I thought, or 11.
So what for you was the difference, the artistic difference? You know, how did you go from doing 4 years of Immortal to create a new show that was still in the same tent and still in the same environment? To make it different?
I think that the evolution, the how A, me in relation to the company and the company in relation to me as well as everybody else that was involved really went from, you know, one level to another. So we started off with... just to give an example, the guy that came to do the lights like 2 days before we were opening for Immortal. And I remember going, no, I want the lights on the floor. And he was going, lights on the floor in a tent. You know, we can't have that. The audience are going to trip over cables. And, you know, and I, at that point, I knew I wanted to see this, but it was quite new for me as well, from the very, very first Immortal, where this big carousel was coming in through the tent, and it was about 6 meters long, and 4 years of that, where Immortal refined itself. And actually, for me, the turning point was the fourth Immortal, where we created the donut. And that changed very much. That at that stage, there was much more of an understanding, A, of the tent, B, of how we could make that space really work for us and to make a different experience, you know, a different experience for the audience. I think that Immortal 4 that went to the roundhouse that had the donut that was created for, you know, those pillars inside the roundhouse and was a very big and strong departure and yeah. Had a great feel to it.
We had a bit more money by then as well, didn't we? We'd made the first two shows, we'd really struggled. I remember doing presentations where I'd say we lost 40 grand the first year. We lost 20 grand the second year.
Yes.
And the third year we broke even. And then that Immortal 2007, which was the last year, was actually the turning point in terms of being able to survive as a company. And we brought in about 60 grand profit. And it was like, wow, we could actually do this and pay back all the debts lost.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And be on a more sustainable financial model to be making the shows and having better quality artists and
the level went up and you know what we were looking for as well changed in terms of expectation in terms of, and so that's where Taboo started from there as well, from
a higher playing field basically.
Yes, that's for sure. And
by then we were touring internationally with people willing to pay bigger fees than they were in the UK as well, which meant that we could plan better for rehearsals and, you know, have longer, though never long enough.
I know, but that's, no, but, you know, even just for Taboo being able to create that apparatus that was... And then we called the coma, that creating that image. Remember, in the church we were at the back of Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah, in the annex.
The annex. We did quite a lot of...
I remember that conversation where you came and said, I want to see loads of people suspended by wires horizontally. And I was like, oh, that's the image from that film Coma. Let's see how we make it.
Yeah. And then I went to get the film and I thought, that's it, you know. But, you know, having people like Natalia there, that I think was one of the people that really helped make some images develop and work. And
yeah, we were then starting to work with some really good international performers, and the company had enough profile to attract them. I think that was... And people were really interested in working with you, so they wanted to come and...
Although I remember going to Toulouse and auditioning a few people, and then I invited Natalia back. And I remember, Tom was saying, "No, I think she's going to be a bit too much of a prima donna. She's not going to put up and down the tent, and feels a bit like a star." I was going, "No, you've got to, And she was great. And the same was for Elena Burani. I miss her this year in Bianco. You know, there are some people that are really quite interested in exploring rather than this is my act and tell me what to do.
They want to research the form.
Yeah.
And push the barriers.
And get a lot out of it.
And you don't come across them very often, do you, those types?
No.
Within a company?
No. And the more circus schools go into that, the more circus has in recent years, it has become an art form in its own right, and everybody know, a lot more people know about circus than they used to. And, of course, that pushes the desire for schools to have a higher level of skill, and the desire to have a higher level of skill, it means that people go specialize in one thing and they're completely self-obsessed in that one, and that creates different animal. It actually creates different people that go around and are going to be employed. It's a generalization, of course, but
schools like Doc, though, which, I've become quite interested in the Swedish school model because they spend a lot more time on research than necessary. You know, you might go there with your extremely high skill already and then spend a bit more time looking at artistic development and research and how you put circus into the wider world of performance art or whatever.